The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. We're open line on Man in Line today. Call 66 13 68. Text 166 177. WhatsApp, same number. Email studio at manxradio.com. The new revised Manx Highway Code will be published at the end of the summer. Promising new guidelines for cyclists in terms of their positioning on the road and when they ride in groups, also aiming to give greater protection to vulnerable road users, cyclists, motorcyclists, pedestrians and horse riders. Any thoughts? We had some notes in yesterday about, but also about the tourists on the cruise liner. A note in from 528 says, extend the horse trams around the train station, bus station, around the sea terminal area, and a joined up transport system. There was a plan, wasn't there, years ago, to take the horse trams from the sea terminal around North Quay to go to the steam railway station. I'm guessing that's not going to happen anymore now, but it was an idea at one time. Regarding the topic the other day about government vans and the like being parked up overnight in residential areas, I have five commercial vehicles, and my insurance states that they must be parked up overnight at my place of work and only used for the sole purpose of work-related business and not for personal use. This surely must be the same for government vehicles. If not, there must be a nightmare to state where all the thousands of government vehicles are parked overnight. Just a thought. Well, if you're in the insurance industry, that sounds very plausible. The fact that a commercial vehicle must only be used for work-related business, not to and from the place of residence. And yet, David's with us first today. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. I just want to talk about the Information Commissioner and an article that was on Manx Radio, which is very interesting when you delve into it a little bit more, where it says he was in favour of having a charge for requests, for FOI requests to him, but in his submission there he said he didn't want it to be a disincentive for people to ask questions. Yeah. And we know the government's supposed to be open and transparent, don't we? So really, how do we get to know the information that they are not put in the public domain, but are hiding it there for somebody to find in years' time?
Well, we don't know, do we?
We don't know a lot of things, to tell you the truth on that. So the interesting scenario was, when I was researching this too, was Jason Morehouse, the number one answer of questions, whether good, bad or indifferent, is they couldn't say in the parliament there how much it costs to research a question. Now, I believe they're wrong on that, because years ago there was a figure from government at the time when I was there,
yeah,
which gave you an idea of the cost for a question to be answered.
I remember that, and that was because, I'm sure it was because of the questions that Peter Caron was asking, because he was always putting questions in, and people were then, yeah, saying, you know, how much. So I'm sure they came up with a figure for it.
Yeah, and it was there's a little article on that somewhere, and I couldn't find it again. The trouble is with the internet, once you find something, if you don't print it off, you lose it and it's hard to find. So that's one of the scenarios out there, that the politicians are listening, or people are listening, who put in requests, and simple requests. They're not major requests for information. We don't need to know all the secrets, but what we need to know is basically how much is this costing us, how much is that costing us, where we are with different things, and where we're going to be in the future. So on this particular question regarding that, if they can find out the figures for an FOI request, So how through a through a civil service, through the information commissioner, and he wants it to be retained, but he doesn't want it to be a disincentive where you put stupid prices on stuff to get your information that we require in the public domain.
Yeah.
That was what I was going to say.
Well, it's where the line is drawn, isn't it? Because it's you know, it's a laudable thing to have a Freedom of Information Act, but I'm guessing that they're a bit, you know, teed off with the fact that some people send in endless FOIs.
Well, it's I don't know. Maybe this is your fault, not you personally, but Manx Radio. They are our eyes and ears, aren't they? You are our eyes and ears to find out things that are happening,
yeah,
and then publicise to the media and tell us what's going on, because then we can find out different things ourselves, can't we?
Well, I'll be honest with you. We're always sending FOIs in. The journalists are always sending, yeah, stuff in just to research stories.
And I would say to that, that's fine, that's the way it should be, and the newspapers will do the same, and the other radio stations will do the same as well, because otherwise the government is not open and transparent, are they?
No, and that's the thing that you remember at the last election, that's all, apart from green issues, transparency,
yeah,
was something everybody wanted.
Yeah, yeah. And it's got to be easier. And why do we want to hide stuff? Because eventually, even if in years to come, it comes out, doesn't it? How much it's costing us for the
as you say,
the trams.
And that's it. And remember, this is it's the Isle of Man. If you don't tell,
yeah,
people, they're going to make it up anyway. So
you
may as well just tell the truth in the beginning. I mean, do you remember years ago, they examined a yearbook? Everything was in there. The cost of everything was in there, wasn't it?
Yeah, and why don't we have that sort of thing anymore now? It's probably just because of costs and the number of run on it, because whether we like it or not, the internet's going to be there for ages, isn't it? That's our main source. And don't forget, we're not a small island anymore. People look at stuff. We have listeners in New Zealand, Australia, don't we? All over the place, because there was a lady who used to come on saying, the men in line, we're always negative, but we do positive things as well, and the Isle of Man is a great place to live if anybody's listening.
Yeah.
Okay?
All right, good to hear from you. Thanks for being with us.
See ya.
Have Isle of Man fish producers issued a statement on the UK government's acquiescence to taking more US seafood products, says Andy. We've not heard from them yet, really, about that. I did spot that story about seafood. Wilf's with us now. Hi, Wilf.
Hi there. I haven't been on for a while, so you'll have to be gentle with me.
Okay.
All it is was I hope somebody would take a photograph of this timber that's on the Ramsey Quay at the moment.
Yeah.
Because it's the biggest heap I've seen, and it's a double heap, and it must be, oh, I don't know, 50, 60 yards long, this one. And they're unloading the Mezzeron boat now, and that'll be probably pulled alongside, and then it'll be loaded onto there, not loaded to go out. Now, I believe, and I've been told, that it's going away to be burnt. Now, that's correct or not, I wouldn't know. In some big factory that produces electric something, I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't gone into it, but the thing is, you see, people are saying, oh, well, why didn't they cut down, give it to us for our fires? Well, that wouldn't suit the government, because it's going to cause smoke. And we're the Green Party now. But the thing is, I'm sort of with the government on this one. Not the smoke, I'm not worried about that. I'm talking about the of shipping this timber out, because they'd obviously be flogging it, and they're getting a bob or two back. And people, it's a fellow come on who's a chief forester, whatever it is, and he said that, well, some of them are 50 years old, 60 years old, maybe up to 70 years old, and they're too big. The wind's going to blow them over. Well, I never heard of a lot of rubbish in my life. The bigger it is, the stronger it gets. But anyway, that's beside the point. He had to say what he's been told to say, probably. But the thing is, when these things were planted, it cost government money to plant them, and fellas working planting them all those years ago, and they were planted for a cash crop. And that's exactly what they're using for. So I'm sort of with the government on this one, which is very unusual for me. But that's simply what it is. It's a cash crop, and there'll be more will be coming down.
How long have they been? How long has the wood been there? Because I've seen a couple of loads.
Oh, yeah, what you seen the other day, that's only a little pup towards what's there now. The whole side of that quay is nearly full. And it's a double load as well. It's a double banked. Well, every wagon that comes down the quay past me and shakes my house. So there's a lot come down. And I think that they were cutting them from up above, so I was told. You go to St. John's, go through St. John's, take a sharp left, and you go up to where that place where all them cars were in the field,
yeah,
where the fella had to get them shifted. They're up there, and they're all cut from round there, I believe. So it must be pretty open by now up there. But that's what it is. It's a cash crop, and it's fair enough. And they're all pine, as far as I can see.
Right, okay.
They're all pine trees. They're not deciduous trees. They're not oaks or nothing like that. They're cutting down, so it's fair enough.
Okay. I've got to write this down. Wilf, I've got to write this down. Thursday, May the 15th, 2025. Hang on. Wilf agrees with government. I've just written that down.
That's it. Yeah, yeah, you write it down because that's very, well, extremely rare occasion,
all right.
I would say.
All right. Cheers, Wilf. Take care.
Okay, all right.
18 minutes past 12, now you've heard it. And maybe the fact that we're exporting wood and the we've not had it confirmed, but it could be that's going to the UK's wood-burning power station at Drax in South Yorkshire, the Drax power station. But I would assume that that wood's got to be dried before they do that, because they were buying, I think, Canadian wood pellets for that. But we'll find out. If that is the case, of course, it may embellish our green credentials. We may get credits for that. You never know, do you? Howard's on now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. I wouldn't bother writing that down about Wilf. The government will already have that in the archives now.
Okay.
They'll be trembling in their boots. No, what it was saying about the commercial vehicles, a lot of people, I've got a van, as you know, and it's a private van. It's not a commercial vehicle, although it was built initially as a commercial vehicle. And when I insure it, I have to insure it, and I can't change the way it's done because I've tried three insurance companies here on the island. It has to be insured under commercial vehicle aspect. And essentially, I'm the only one that can drive it. When our grandson comes over, I get him put on my policy at my cost. It's not a lot, but it's a legal requirement. I have to put his name, and the last time he was over, I had to get his driving license and everything to ensure that he was, you know, allowed to drive it. So I don't know how everybody's insurance, but I've tried three companies, and each one has told me, regardless of whether it's a privately owned private van, privately used, not for commercial use, it's still considered a commercial vehicle. So wherever,
and do they say how that works, Howard? The fact that it's obviously a private vehicle. So is it,
yep,
just because it's a van?
Yep. So this is what. Now, if you may remember, several years ago up in the north of the island, I don't know why it happened, but I know of it, there was a chap was driving his father's van, and he was stopped by the police. And it eventually went to court, and he was fined for driving without insurance, because it was his father's van. Although commercial, he was not entitled to drive it. That was the way it went through the courts.
Right.
And that man had to pay a fine. So I've only just insured my van again recently. And they do, it's on my insurance as I am the sole driver. It is a way around various things. You can get a fleet insurance. People are going to come on and say, oh, you're wrong. Yes, you can get fleet, and you can have named drivers on them. But that is additional expenses. But my van, as it is, as it stands, is a private vehicle in my mind. It's actually carpeted inside because the stuff I carry is not rubbish, not working gear, anything like that. But it's still considered, for the sake of the insurance company, a commercial vehicle. And as I said, my grandson came over, and it was only less than 20 quid, but he was here for about 10 days, and he was allowed then, named on my policy, as an additional driver. So it might be wise for some people to think about this if they have a van, and they say, oh, jump in, take the van down there, and they can find out that if anything happens, they're not insured.
Interesting.
Yeah. But also, I think it's on our income tax forms. I've got mine upstairs. It's arrived the other day. And I think in one of the columns, it says benefit in kind. Do you receive benefit in kind? And that could apply to people taking their works vans, like the highway, but well, a DOI, anything on that aspect, various other ways of doing it. Are they receiving a benefit in kind? And if so, that should be declared on their income tax form.
Interesting.
And
yeah,
it's one thing that if you have a vehicle and you use it for your own benefit as opposed to just for commercial use. Even mine, when I stopped work and retired, I was able to reduce my insurance costs by not what they term as commuting, and that is taking the vehicle to and from work. And it reduced my insurance by about, well, not a great deal, but about £30, which is okay in anybody's money.
Yeah.
But these are the things that the highway, I keep referring to them, DOI, with their vehicles, people taking them home, are they fully insured while they're parked and the persons have them outside their house? Because I know there's two or three up where I live.
All right. Appreciate that, Howard. Thanks for raising that point. We've had a couple of more notes in about that. Good to hear from you. Thanks, Howard.
Take care. Bye now.
By now, 23 minutes past 12. Nick the Skip said, my van is insured as a commercial vehicle as well, yet it is my personal vehicle. I thought it was an error, but it's not. I think mine used to be a taxi. Thanks for that. And Robert's on now. Hi, Robert.
Hi, I've got a big one for you.
Yeah.
What do you think about a Manx Freedom Party?
Oh, I love parties. What is there to eat?
Well, I've had sausages.
Okay.
I've had sausages. No, seriously, I think a Manx Freedom Party would be a goer. I think we need to create a meeting. I think we need to set it up. I think there's too many Netflix subscriptions over to our overlords over in the UK who never shut up. And we're just sat at the end of a pike of a BBC output and hardly getting any collateral from it. So I think we need to stand our own three feet and do our own thing. There was a thing about the Ellen Vannon People's Party mentioned at the meeting, the last one. But I didn't think that roll off the tongue, so I think the Manx Freedom Party is a goer.
Well, anybody can start a party, so you could go for it yourself, Robert.
I may do. We'll see what happens.
All right. Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye.
25 past 12, and Juan's with us now. Hi, Juan.
Manx omelette party, I think, Andy.
There we are.
That rolls off the tongue. Robert has got a point, actually. We're all jesting aside. He has got a point. I think when they asked someone to promote transparency last time in government, and I think it was a little bit hard to hear, and he misheard them, and he thought it was promoting transgenderism. But it was very close. But, you know, they'll get there eventually. I'm sure they will. You were talking there before, a couple of points. You were talking about the examiner yearbook. I mean, they were so interesting as well. And I've got to say, I've borrowed one of Steve Dawson's recently, and Steve, I've got to give it you back, I haven't forgotten, but everything was in there. There was so interesting to read through the history going back through them yearbooks, Andy.
Well, like you, I often have 3 hours to waste, and I look through those things. Yeah, first of all, everybody's salary is in there, Every municipal employee's salary is in there. And it, I mean, maybe, well, it was the Examiner, so the newspapers did it. There was obviously a market for it. I don't know whether the newspaper nowadays will be into that sort of thing, though.
Could you imagine that, the transparency of everyone's wages in there and stuff? My God. You were talking there about timber before, and someone was saying to me a few weeks ago that all this timber that was going off the island, and there was actually a shortage of farming fence timber. I don't know how true that is, that there wasn't enough stakes and posts, but all this stuff was getting shipped off the island. So I don't know. And interestingly, I was having a meeting with a very good friend of mine a few weeks ago who's actually involved in a big industry that's coming up that a lot of the world are signing into, and it's making softwood timbers into hardwood. Very, very interesting procedure. I was with him, he was showing me all the samples and everything. So maybe the Isle of Man government might have a little inroad there, you know. Tom, to give me a ring and I can put them in touch. Island resident as well, lives over here. Going to be a big business. There's so many people looking for hardwoods, and obviously the time constraints of growing that forestation compared to softwood is a lot different. So amazing the amount of people, the different people that we've got living on this island, isn't it, with it's into different things.
Oh, you bet.
A couple of points. John Wannenberg, I was listening to Julian's figures the last few days, obviously, and did he more or less say we're going ahead with this hell or high water? Is that kind of the expression that he used?
Did he say come what may or something like that?
Yeah. A little bit above their reach, isn't it? I mean, again, these people are put in to serve the Isle of Man and the people, and to turn around and say, that's what we're doing regardless. And kind of going on to Robert's point there, really, that they're following agendas, which is not, it's not suitable for us. They're just having to follow these agendas. Or do they? I mean, that's the big question. Do they have to follow these
agendas? Thing is that, I mean, the whole net zero thing is government policy. You know, they were there was a report that came out, I think the annual progress report 23-24, accepted by Timwell last June, highlighting action and updates and deliverables on the current climate change plan. So it's government policy to do this. And
policy can be changed, Andy. Policy can be changed. When we keep coming out with this, it's government policy. It's not law. It's statutes and it's policy.
Yeah.
Policy can be changed. And as you go along, if you find that something's not working, surely it would be idiotic or stupid or reckless to go ahead with it any further. You change your policy. Surely.
Well, that's down to politicians.
And maybe the civil servants who are bullying the politicians. I don't know. I'm just still trying to get to the bottom of that one. The programme you had on the other day about the matrons, and I didn't catch most of it. I've been a bit busy the last few days watching the contrails. Is it 8 matrons that they're bringing on board, did you say?
Yes, all dressed in red.
All dressed in red. What did the old system used to be? Was it it went from a matron down to sisters, down to nurses? I think that used to be the policy, didn't it?
And they brought in ward managers as well.
Right. So are these matrons, are they being upgraded to a matron from managers, or is there more money being spent? I'm just wondering why we need 8 matrons compared to the old system. I think there was one matron used to run the old Nobles Hospital, and then that went down to sisters, if I'm not correct in saying.
Well, again, we come down to policy. That's what they've decided to happen. Basically, I think they realised, if you read between the lines of what they were saying, is the situation wasn't good enough. And something needed to be done. All sorts of things were falling through the cracks, things like a response to complaints and what have you. Also sorting out the emergency department with that sort of backing up at weekends because either people couldn't get to see their GP or couldn't get to meds, so they were going to the emergency department. So all sorts of things, they're off with a new initiative, and we'll only know if it's a success in a few months' time.
Yeah, and I again, we're back to accountability, which is the problem with government. There's no one accountable. It's keep passing the buck to the invisible man then in the office next door. And I think that and the whole old hospital system, the matron used to rule with a rod of iron, and then it went down to the sisters and the nurses. But I'm just wondering, you know, have we got an extra layer of people with more wages involved in this?
We've had Manx Care now for 4 years, and Manx Care was mandated, it was instigated with a mandate to cut costs. It was supposed to bring savings.
Yeah.
So, and nobody's yet said where the savings are. So we'll see. I mean, the thing is that nobody ever, well, I say nobody ever. My point is, if a service is fantastic, the cost is not that much of an issue. It's when the service breaks down that people start to pick at the edges and say, well, how much is this costing anyway? So if something is brilliant, the cost is almost immaterial. You know what I'm saying. The trouble is that there have obviously been things going wrong with what's been happening at Manx Care, i.e. not enough GPs, not enough NHS dentists, people getting letters here, there and everywhere, complaints not responded to. So, you know, the consultants leaving. And from the outside, we all know there's something not quite right. But nobody seems to be putting their finger on as to what's going to remedy it. And the matrons, I presume, is one of their strategies to get things right, Ewan.
Well, and you know, fair play, but I look at the old system when the hospital worked efficiently with one matron, and I'm just wondering, you know, are they managers that's been repositioned? Have they got nursing skills?
Yeah.
And have they been upgraded with their wages? And again, it's all back to, you know, costings, etc. You mentioned before about dentistry, and I think this is what is upsetting the people, the local people who live here all their lives, put into the national insurance system and put into the taxes, to find that there's a 5-year waiting list to get on a dentist.
Yeah.
But there's people coming to this island who are getting put straight onto a national health system and getting dentists. Now, if anything is going to upset local people who have paid into this island for all their lives, it's that. And I do not understand the logic of where this government is going with some of this stuff. But you're upsetting the locals, and you're going to ignite somewhere along the line. I mean, we're 70 miles away from what's happening in the UK. Not very far at all. And people are very, very concerned about what's going on. Hence the amount of FOIs that's going in, because this government is not being transparent and telling the people the truth. Even if they turn around and say, listen, we're being bullied. We're being bullied by the big corporates and this and the other. At least we know what we're fighting against. But when you've got a government that stays silent and is doing things against its people, and then they can't get their own health care, the basics of health care and dentistry, we've got a problem coming up, Andy, and it needs to be addressed. So, you know, maybe Robert's right. We do need another party to counter what's going on. I don't know.
All right. Sure. Good to hear from you.
Take care, Andy.
All right. 26 minutes before one. Just going back to the dentistry stuff, the health minister hasn't ruled out changing who's eligible for an NHS dentist on the Isle of Man to help reduce the waiting list. Now, there are currently 6,254 people waiting to be allocated, sitting there, looking around saying, where's the dentist? Manx Care says it's in a position to look at unifying the way it pays dental providers for services and to implement contractual changes which are hoped to improve access to dental services. That's corporate speak for paying the dentist more money. At the moment, they're paid by UDAs, Units of Dental Activity. In the Keys, the Health and Social Care Minister, Claire Christian, couldn't definitively say whether eligibility criteria will need to be changed to achieve that.
There are currently 7 contractors delivering NHS dental services from 9 practices across the island. Manx Care also have a salaried general dental practice, Hillside, and the community dental service. There is currently a waiting list for patients who wish to access the NHS dentist. And in response to the mandate, Manx Care's operating plan 25-26 aims to assure that the units of dental activity, which is UDA, delivered as a proportion of a contracted activity will be at least 96%. Manx Care has commenced work to unify the UDA value that will increase the NHS dental activity and allocation to NHS dental contractors, which supports our health service taking a fundamental step forward to addressing the long-standing waiting list and allocation issue. Manx Care are seeking a different approach to address the waiting time, which looks at changes to how dental contractors are paid. By unifying the unit of dental activity rate, Manx Care will create the incentive for dental contractors to take on patients and significantly reduce the waiting list.
Does the Minister think that is possible to achieve without restricting the access criteria to dentistry?
So the Honourable Member, I can't answer that today. Yes, with the eligibility criteria that it currently stands, this is something that we do absolutely have to review and are reviewing as that piece of work. So I wouldn't want to anticipate something until I've seen that full piece of work. And I hope the Honourable Member understands that I wouldn't want to commit to something or say something here today that would be inaccurate.
That was Claire Christian talking in case. I'm sorry she sounded like she was in a bathroom, but I think some of the other members had their microphones open at the same time. So seven contractors, nine practices, and one salaried, as in Hillside. As it is at the moment, we all know if you're one of those 6,254 people waiting to be allocated a place on an NHS list, we all know something is not quite right here. We don't know what it is. Presumably at the bottom of everything is money. So what do they have to do? Throw more money at this? Lots of people now have private dental insurance. Came in about 20 years ago, didn't it, when Denplan was introduced by one dentist on the Isle of Man. And lots of people have got it. Perhaps you indeed have got a private dental plan. Do you think it's time to just say everybody's got to have a private dental plan? If we're fighting an uphill battle with the dentists or Manx Care are, remember, we're caught in the middle. Is it time for a new approach? What do you think? Oh, Diane's with us. So, thanks for hanging on, Diane. You've been there for ages.
Yes, I've been listening to you and listening to Dewan. And I rang in because I understand the gentleman that answers the phone, he's seen him because he's been outside for some reason or other. But the place is filling up with the chemtrails. When I last looked out about 10 minutes ago, there was I could see the one of the planes in front of it. Some of them are spreading out now, the ones towards the west, which is a bit west of the newer ones. But if you manage to look out, or when you're finished and you go out or whatever, have a look and you will see them.
Well, I can see the contrails, the condensation trails, because they fly right over us, don't they?
Condensation trails. These are geoengineering. They're long. They'll still be there 2 hours long. They will spread out.
Right. And when you say geoengineering, what are they aiming to do?
Well, one of the things that's in them, and there's lots of poisons in them as well, is aluminium tiny pieces. And this is what's been killing off the bees when they took the dead bees and sort of opened their bodies up, their bodies, they had Alzheimer's disease and their bodies was full of minute pieces of aluminium. So as that comes down, the bees and that must breathe it in because they're out in it.
Wow.
I understand. Somebody said told me that Alzheimer's disease is growing at quite a pace here on the island.
Well, the thing is that remember that's age related, and everybody's living a lot longer than they used to. Diane, do you remember? Remember when people used to routinely die at 65 and what have you? Now everybody's living to be 90 these days, aren't they?
Yeah, but the bees are not 90.
That's true.
And this really needs stopping because I'd heard quite a program on the killing of the bees that having Alzheimer's disease and full of aluminium.
Well, we're in trouble if we don't have any bees, Diane.
Well, if the bees go, we're the next the humans are the next to go.
Oh, within 3 years, they reckon.
Yes, and so this should be stopped. But then again, they want to get rid of us, don't they? There's too many of us now.
All right. It's time for lunch. Thanks, Diane.
Yeah, you enjoy yourself, Andy, and hope you're keeping well.
Yeah, very well. Thank you very much indeed. Oh, by the way, just one thing to note after what we were talking to Juan about the net zero policy. The net zero stuff is actually law. This isn't policy. It was the Climate Change Act 2021 primary legislation, which says the island must have achieved net zero by 2050. There are interim targets as well. So we have until 2050, and that's law, to hit net zero. The law also says that they can't reverse the decision or push back the targets by a date or by percentage. So home efficiency, public transport, nature, they're all in there. Makes you wonder, doesn't it, though, but with public transport, if they're desperate for us to not have personal vehicles, wouldn't it be better to get more public transport rather than cutting routes? If public transport is the future, then surely we should be investing in it. There's a really interesting, if you're into railways, and I have several friends who are very much into railways, they've just invented a tram, I think, in Coventry that's got a really small turning circle. And it goes, it's what's called very light rail. And it's got a very, very tight turning circle. So surely, and remember, we've got lots of track bed around the Isle of Man. If we're serious about public transport, if we're serious about net zero and about getting to 2050 in net zero, then surely we should be looking at public transport a lot more closely than we are. Because if we're to replace private transport with public transport, then surely it's got to be good.
Hi, Liz. I see you've had your garage converted.
We're desperate for more room.
Yes. Come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Spectrum Windows. If your house needs a new look and your windows let in rain, keep those cold breezes out and make it look like new again. Spectrum Windows, Spectrum Windows. Quality through and through. Great work guaranteed to you. Spectrum Windows, Spectrum Windows.
The extended Ramsey Garden Centre is deceptively large. You'll find a warm welcome and everything from bedding and perennials, fruit and vegetables, to lighting, garden ornaments, bird baths, bird tables and indoor and outdoor pots. Come and browse at Ramsey Garden Centre.
Did you hear?
Hear what?
Skipton International has a fixed rate bond at 4.4%.
Oh, really? That's a strong return. How does it work?
Skipton International's based in Guernsey, and with £100,000 or more deposit, you can lock in that great rate. Fixed until 31st of March 2026.
Sounds like a smart move. I'll check it out.
For details on all of Skipton's savings products, call 01481 730 730 or visit skiptoninternational.com today. Skipton International is licensed to take deposits by the GFSC and is a participant in the Guernsey Banking Deposit Compensation Scheme. See dcs.gg.
The Journey to a Dream podcast isn't just about fast bikes. It's also about generational adrenaline, how to prepare for the mountain course, and caffeine.
I must say coffee's a strong point on a morning, you can imagine.
You could just got it on a drip. Do you have problems sleeping, Daryl?
On the night before a meeting, yes, definitely.
If you've a plan in your head as to what you're going to be thinking about at a given point in the track, it'll help you.
Me? I work in an office. You'd never guess,
would you? No, you don't. Yeah, really?
Yeah. What did you think? Model.
The Journey to a Dream podcast, brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance, is available now on the Manx Radio Motorsport website or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
12:45 it is. Not only should we have more public transport, but it should be free to encourage more of us to use it, says Malcolm. Mr. Wannenberg didn't, this is James who just said, Mr. Wannenberg didn't say the Eristane project was being progressed come what may. He actually said they weren't ripping it up and starting again. Wanted to see the full findings of the environmental impact assessment before making a decision. All your callers seem to be followers of Jessie Ventura. Is she Manx? I got a call on Tuesday, my dentist offering me a dentist Wednesday. Couldn't get there, so they said, how about Thursday? So just been. It's in Peel, but I live in Douglas. It must have been waiting 3 years at least. That's from 951. This talk of a health levy, it suggests to people on dental lists should be removed in favour of others waiting. What sort of system are we paying for? Well, Bonzo's on now. Hi, Bonzo.
Hello. Who is Jesse Ventura?
He's an American politician. He's a former wrestler, I think, in America. He's a media personality, one of these political commentators they have in America.
Is he a tinfoil hat merchant?
He's done everything, really. He was in the World Wrestling Federation. But you wouldn't argue with him. He's a big lad. He was governor of Mississippi, Minnesota, I think.
Oh, right, yes. So basically anything on the... on the Trumpist agenda. Right. Well, okay. I think I can ignore that. Free public transport.
Yeah.
Now, before anyone goes on about, oh, no, it isn't free. Yes, I know that. We're talking about free at the point of use.
Yeah.
In the same way as hospitals are free at the point of use and schools are free at the point of use. Because they're what economists call a public good, it's something that benefits everybody. Now, seeing as Bus Vanin, what was the latest figure that was quoted for the subvention of Bus Vanin? Was it 7 million a year?
Getting on for, I think, yeah.
Yeah, seven million a year, and the fares that are collected, I think, only came to something like half of that, or less than half, I think. Was that something like £2 million, I think, was the figure mentioned?
I think what they said was if it was... £2 million would run the buses, so if everybody got free transport, it would cost about £2 million a year.
Right, OK. So, given the benefits, of lower car use, and greater environmental benefits and convenience, all these things, then free public transport seems a very, very reasonable idea. Indeed, they have it in Luxembourg, if I remember right.
Indeed, they do. And the thing is that it's one of those things that when it's free and if it's good and if it's comfortable, if it's warm and well lit and it's regular and it goes late in the night, then suddenly it becomes a way of life and everybody will use it. If it's not there, it's one of those things you have to do it and then people will realise what it is.
Absolutely. And then being able to run light rail services, because I believe when they replaced the track from Douglas to Port Erin, it was specced for a light rail service,
yeah,
like in the Newcastle Metro or some such. And of course, those trains can run on, or those light rail units can run on the MER as well.
Yeah, well, the thing what we have is vintage rolling stock, but our rails are 21st century. They're completely up to snuff. It has to be to pass muster, to get certified, they have to be there. So, I mean, as you say, we could run modern stuff on those rails.
Yeah, in commuter hours. Yeah, and that's perfectly logical. And indeed, even the monorail out to Peel, maybe, I don't know. But certainly, the idea of getting people off our ever more crowded, congested, worn out, cost loads of money to repair roads, and getting them on frequent, nice public transport, which is free at the point of use, so encourages loads more people to use it. you know, it's benefit for everybody. And I believe the Manx Labour Party and the Greens, I'm not quite sure about Liberal, Manny, but I think they've certainly advocated free public transport in the past. And Climate Change Coalition, I think, advocated free public transport in the past. So I certainly think that's something that has to be explored in people's manifestos next year.
And also, I mean, that amount of, I'm not, you know, looking down at £2 million a year. Well, I am actually. In government terms, that's a piffling amount of money.
I wouldn't say that's a Julie Edgerton, yeah.
Well, I mean, compared to other things, I mean, at the backdrop of this, we've always got the Liverpool landing stage, so, and you know, an overspends on the Douglas Promenade. But if you're talking about a utility, and it would be a utility that would be universally available to people, you know, as in free public transport, suddenly you'd transform people's lives, Bonzo.
Well, that's it. I mean, as the minister, I think, was saying in Keys earlier this week, you know, it's a service. It's not a, you know, it's not how much profit do we make on this? How much? Well, depends how you measure it, but probably on none of them really. It is a service, and we run it. And bus services are, you know, public transport services are run to a certain extent in many areas as a, you know, so as a service to the community rather than on a strictly profit and loss basis.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Appreciate it. Thanks, Bonzo.
Yep. Cheers. Bye.
8 minutes before one. The Robin Hood style of politics needs to come to an end. You can't base dentistry criteria on income. A higher income doesn't always mean a higher disposable income. Regarding chemtrails, do these people think that all the commercial pilots have a chemtrail button in the cockpit when they press on purpose when they fly over the Isle of Man just to give some people the chance to come up with another conspiracy theory? Wouldn't one of those pilots have come out and said something by now, says Andrew? Well, of course they would. And the whole issue about these contrails, condensation trails, remember, we're on the direct flight path from the south of England over the pole to the United States. So we get tons of planes going over with there. And quite right, nobody has ever, for all the, you know, it's going to be chemicals and it's going to be mind-altering, trying to bomb the Isle of Man from 30,000 feet up with tiny bits of vapour will be a bit haphazard, to say the least. However, it is some people's opinion, and that's their opinion. There's no such thing as chemtrails. From aeroplanes, the Civil Aviation Authority will prosecute immediately if it happened. Not only that, everybody'd say something, wouldn't he? I mean, the guys who pump the fuel into the planes, they'd say something, surely, wouldn't they? If you have a fire in a grate, smoke and fumes go up the chimney. If a plane's flying using an engine, the fumes come out of the rear as well as condensation occurring, says Pete. We need to invest in an elevated maglift train that circumnavigates the Isle of Man and have it free. Probably cost less than the landing stage in Liverpool. It's always a point, isn't it, that Liverpool landing stage is going to be up there as a bellwether, really. It's going to be there as an icon as to how much the government can spend on something. So, it'll be interesting. A couple of weeks' time, Devon Watson is on Man in Line. Devon is now of the Manx Labour Party. Devon is now Douglas City Council leader. So this coming Friday, tomorrow, Nick Kay, the pharmacist, is on, chairman of the National Pharmacy Association. And Manx Care has always talked about, and the ministers have always talked about, getting the relationship of your provider, whether it's the doctor, whether it's part of Manx Care ED or meds or what have you, and the pharmacist. Remember the minor injuries scheme and what have you, the minor ailment scheme. Well, the pharmacist plays a big part in that. Nick Kay knows of what he speaks. Pharmacy has been in his family for generations. From Cornwall he's from, but now works on the Isle of Man in Balfane. Anyway, Nick Kay's on tomorrow. A week on Friday, a week tomorrow, David Cretney will be with us, Douglas City Councillor. Longtime MHK minister and LegCo member David Cretney recently romped home in the election. And then the following Thursday, the leader of Douglas City Council is on, Devon Watson. And Devon has always always had, he's been on many times on Man in Line, got a lot to say, and particularly he's talked about free public transport and how it can be achieved. So tomorrow, Nick Kay, a week tomorrow, David Cretney, and the following Thursday, Devon Watson will be on Man in Line. Coventry is a lot flatter than the Isle of Man, says this correspondent. That's true. However, places like Sheffield aren't. Trams can go up hills. Regarding free public transport, says Wolfie, this would work well if it were operated by the private sector, paid by miles travelled and passenger number, not operated by the government. Thank you, Wolfie. Worker bees, which are female, live the shortest lives, usually between 4 and 6 weeks. That's not a lot of time to get Alzheimer's, says Derek. Thank you, Will. Said the worst transgressors regarding corporate vans, commercial vans, are carpet company vans. They're everywhere and they're massive now. All the best to you. Let's have a look here. And a message in from... Jason. Thank you. Oh, Jason Morehouse, MHK, is with us. Says Andy, free buses. I think the cost will be £12 million. £12 million? £5 million plus is currently collected in fares. £7 million is the current support. £12 million. We'll have to find out more. How sad I am to hear, says Jay, that the family library is closing down. All of the money the government's thrown away on consultations for this and that, speed zones and what have you, yet a very important part of our children's education is just fading away. Shameful this is, says Jay. The family library, well, I wonder, is it going? Is it they said it is, but is it? Right, we'll find out. Pharmacy tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. WINT.